Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Fiction. Science fiction. Horror. Fantasy. Crime. LGBT. Thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery. With your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCPW 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Welcome back into the House of Mystery, and of course, I'm Al Warren, and we've got Mr. David Martino on the backside.
The what?
The backside. I was going to say, never mind. That didn't turn out, but that's okay. Yeah, we're never okay. that correct anyway. So, here we go. Got back from another busy day down at the. Downtown there, and I was at the protest.
Looking for your foreskin?
Yeah, the foreskin protest. I had to get down there and see what was going on. And it was not that exciting because I don't know why they want their foreskin back after 40 years.
I don't know.
That's crazy. Well, now, speaking of that, foreskin.
What a way to enter open this show.
We've got a great writer, actually, a great Canadian writer, and this is amazing. So he's got another book just come out here. And Mr. David Darling, thank you for going down into your basement in your pajamas and talking to us.
Thank you very much, Alan, from foreskin to pajamas. Wow, you've really broadened your horizons there.
Well, you know, we like to touch all bases.
Thank you very much for having me back. It's appreciated.
So your new book, tell us what's going on there. Now, you did this really fast. How did you put this together so fast?
Well, on the backside, it appears fast. However, first, let's start with the title. The title is Grim Measures. And one of the things as a writer I wanted to work on, which I constantly work on, is pacing and tension throughout for all my novels. And with Grim Measures, it didn't even start out as a novel. It's technically a novel. It's 30,000 words, one third of a novel. And I started this with just the intention of a writing exercise to work on my pace and tension within a novel to see if I could, I'll just say squish it down and get down to the meat and bones of a story and go with that. So I actually started this last fall and in September, and then as a side project, and then just around Christmas, it was pretty much done. And I decided, well, you know what? It's no longer a project. It turned into a pretty darn good story, I like to think. So
now, is this part of the series of what you've been doing, or is this something totally different?
No, this is a standalone series, or correction, a standalone novel. So not related to my police thriller series at all.
What's the idea behind this book? What's the premise?
Well, the premise is this single father, his name's John Welland. One snowy, blustery evening in January, this man lives with his daughter out in Michigan, and his daughter is kidnapped in the middle of the night. And there's no trace, there's no clue, and he's given up all hope. A couple months later, he gets a phone call from the kidnapper saying he has one chance to get his daughter back, but he has to follow the instructions to the letter. And it starts off with him having to kill an FBI agent. And the plot goes from there. And then he follows a series of instructions, and I don't want to give the ending away. So, however, there is a light at the end of the tunnel.
You write about these thrillers and action adventure and all this stuff like that. What is this kind of like what you hope people pick up the book and they run through it, like they read through it and they come out of it? Is it just like totally action? Is that sort of what your output is? That's what you want people to get?
I'm not going to lie. I do like, as a reader, I really enjoy the action scene. If I can read a book and it kind of gets the blood pressure up and the fingers are shaking a little bit as you're quickly turning the page to find out what happened, for me as a reader, that's ideal. As a writer, I found to try and write a whole book like that, it'll feel like somebody's running a marathon. There's no chance to recover. So that comes back to my practice of pacing and tension. So I do like to write about that, but not all the time. I brought in elements of, like I said, this was a writing exercise that turned into a novel. So I have elements of the tension, the fear of a father losing their child, a single father. He didn't even have his wife to rely on. Tense situations as he's looking for her, following the instructions. So of the kidnapper, the abductor. So it all accumulates and it builds and builds. But as the writer, one of the things I really like to do at the end is I want to say like a twist, something that you kind of went, hey, I didn't see that coming. But if you read it a second time, you'll see all these foreshadowing events that will dictate what could have happened. So if you paid attention.
Well, having written a standalone and you've written some series books, do you have a preference? Do you like to write, the standalone better than, let's say, a series, or do you like them equally?
I've written, this Grim Measures is a standalone, and I've written another novel called, let me look over my shoulder, Serve in the Shadows Recruitment. And that's also a standalone. And I had a good time with that. And I've also written three novels in a series. I think they're just different altogether. I'm going into book four on this one series, and I feel confident with my characters already that I can start showing some growth, development, some changes as the series progresses, which, it's not like a Jack Reacher. He's always stuck in the exact same thing, like a form. They're growing and developing, whereas a standalone is like a snapshot. Boom, it is what it is. So that part I really enjoy as well. So there's advantages and disadvantages to both, I think.
What do you like reading yourself? Like when you get to that, do you like those Jack Reachers, or do you like it when there's really not a lot of character development, just this little pieces here and there? It's almost like a just kind of hints to who this person is or how they react to certain situations, but it's generally about the thrill ride more than the character.
Well, I guess it comes down to two types of novels. You get a plot or a story based novel, or a character development type novel where you're right into the character and I don't care what this character does, I'm going to read it because I really enjoy it. Or, to get into the intricacies of the plot, are you caught up in the story? So I guess the ideal situation is a bit of both. And I think that's what makes a really good novel, to be honest. As a reader myself, I'm more into the plot of a particular novel. And if it carries on through a series, maybe I'd, yeah, after well, how many Jack Reacher books were there? 26, 27. There should have been some major development, character development by the end, you know, geez, something. That'd be great. It didn't really happen with Jack Reacher, but maybe near the last few, but I don't want to be too critical because I don't need Lee Child fans beating me up and stuff. So.
Yeah. You don't want to do that. You know, they might be like Jack Reacher. They come beat you up.
Yeah.
You'd be in trouble. Well, how do you build your tension? Like, what is your tension all about in a book? Is it mental suspense? Yeah, that, you know. Or is it I'm trying to think how you would characterize the suspense in the book. Is it like Alfred Hitchcock style, or how would you talk about it?
I think a good writer could build suspense describing somebody making a peanut butter and jam sandwich. Like, it's just, you know, it's all in the words and in the play and in the sentences. However, there's a certain style that goes along with, let's just say, a thriller type novel, where when you're getting into a tense scene, the sentences are going to be shorter, almost clipped. You're going to have abrupt actions. You're going to have, what's behind the door? I thought I heard a noise. Well, when the door opened, boy, did he ever get a shock. End of chapter. What happened next? Maybe you go on to somebody else's point of view and tell that a little side story before you jump back in there. I find those kind of things help build the tension to a certain extent, but I find it all based around the story, not necessarily the characters at that point.
So where did you get the idea for this story?
I actually started it off as a poltergeist, a ghost type story. And then I believe I mentioned to you during our last talk, last interview, how I was doing a lot of research into human trafficking and abductions and kidnappings and stuff like that. And you'd mentioned a couple of your novels as well.
Right.
And I found that to be, hey, it's disturbing. There's a lot of sick stuff out there. And when I was doing a lot of research for this book, I was writing. I cut 5,000 words out of this book. A lot of the scenes and chapters were based around the kidnapper's point of view, trying to have the young 4-year-old child integrate into his family. And you know, it just got so dark and disturbing. I didn't like it. It changed the whole tone of the novel, and I couldn't do it, so I cut it out. Because those scenes don't end well. And that's just what's going on in life. So
Yeah. No, I mean, it is. There's a lot of crazy stuff. But that's interesting that you cut it out rather than leave it. It's just about the total atmosphere of the story then, that you just didn't want to get too dark, I guess.
Well, the main character has his struggles as he's, you know, trying to follow the instructions of the abductor. And then the side story of the abductor having his struggles trying to raise a 4-year-old that wasn't his and knows it wasn't his. Where's my dad? That side story couldn't end well properly. So I had to cut it out, and it kind of gave me the creeps, if you want to know the truth, especially as I was writing it. I'm like, yeah, you know what? This is, it wasn't me. I did write it, but I couldn't keep it. So I didn't even put it in my slush folder. I just deleted it.
Oh, geez, you could have done the uncut version.
Now, you know what? I'm good with that. I wanted a story that in the end had a, I don't want to talk about the ending, I guess, but it's like I said, there's a light at the end of the tunnel, and it's not a train coming towards the main character at full speed.
Well, how do you deal with that darkness? Like after you've written stuff that's, you know, extremely dark, do you have to decompress or, you know, how do you, you kind of get that out of your system?
It stays with you, to be honest. And you relive those scenes. Like some of those scenes I wrote were vivid, and like that's how I picture them in my mind, and then I write along with it. Mm-hmm. You know, some mornings I'd wake up at 4:30 in the morning, and I can still see the scene. I'm going, no, that this scene wouldn't go like that. It would have to happen like this. And next thing I know, I'm making coffee at 5 o'clock, and I'm downstairs and I'm rewriting something. Because it just made sense, because I can visualize it. With the dark stuff like that, it stays with you. You think about it. You know, most writers on their deathbed, their final wish is for somebody to delete their browsing history. Because, man, you know, they do the research. They look mm-hmm. around and they find out about all this stuff that's just not that nice.
No, and the trafficking world's really kind of a dark. I think when I did the In Chains book, the hardest thing was for me it was the shock of what was going on. There were things happening that it didn't even cross my mind could happen or would be happening. It was just kind of a shock, and then that shock stays with you long after the book because you just can't believe that's going on today in the world, mm-hmm. you know.
Well, have you read, it's called The Chain by Adrian McKinty?
No, I don't think so.
It's fairly new. It came out last year. It just exploded on the charts. Stephen King endorsed it, so anything he endorses will take over the world. It's basically a kidnapping book. This woman's daughter was kidnapped. And she can get her daughter back. However, she has to kidnap somebody else's child. And then the woman who kidnapped her daughter will get her son back from somebody else. And then it's a constant chain of events of kidnapping and ransom and money handing over to the bad guys. And that was one of the things I had almost, I wish I'm glad I didn't now. I was going to include that in my novel as one of the things of the kidnapper to have the main character get his daughter back at the end, give me a replacement. But I'm so glad I didn't because it was just already done and I didn't know it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But it's a pretty dark subject. Were you hoping to get something out of that, getting into this sort of kidnapping, trafficking area in a fiction novel?
I go about it as a fictitious mindset. You know, the daughter, the young girl was missing. There's no clues. The kidnapper, the abductor, always seems to have the upper hand and no information that the FBI didn't have. Stuff like that. Would I have done it different? No. I wanted to keep it focused on the journey of the man getting his daughter back, and what he goes through. So,
wow. I would think that's still pretty, it must have been pretty draining process for you because you're, you say you visualize your characters, you visualize the scenes.
For sure. Well, I'm also a parent, so I can understand the absolute agony, you know, somebody must go through. And to be honest, no, you don't really know until it happens to you. I'll give everybody that. But boy, can I picture it. And to me, that would just, whatever. You take my car, take my house, set it all on fire, whatever. But, you know, you touch my daughter. Oh, man. That just cuts to the quick, doesn't it? So,
yeah.
Yeah, that would. Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, so your character. So when you're doing that, like, so what's your process? How do you, are you like driving down the road and all of a sudden a scene comes to your head and that's kind of where the story initiates, or is it something that, are you in a certain place or position, or do you put yourself in a certain mood? Where does this idea begin?
Well, I'll talk about last week's idea. My wife watches a lot of these Hallmark Christmas, Easter seasonal movies. I mean,
I always wondered who did that.
Yeah. Actually, I know one of the authors. Her name's Jenny Hale. She's a fabulous writer. Anyway, I've been joking with her on Twitter saying, oh, my wife wants me to write one of these stories. And I'm going, oh, man, I'm a police thriller, psychological thriller kind of guy at heart. So I go, I don't even know where to start. So anyway, I said, I'd give it a shot. So I started. I started last week. It's not going to quite turn out to be a Hallmark kind of book, but I just had a concept, you know, let's go with it. So I started the vacationing couple in the Bahamas. And soon, I'm already 10,000 words into this story since last week. So, and it's quickly changed from a romantic couple honeymoon kind of situation to, there's a death at the resort and then another death. It was all these people that had met up together in Nassau in the Bahamas. And they're all staying at this one resort. And it ends up going to be I decided to have instead of the superhero kind of person being, you know, the U.S. Army Ranger or a CIA agent, the big tough guy, it's going to be the woman, the wife. And she's there on assignment, and her husband doesn't know anything about it, but now he has to help her out because she's been compromised. So stuff like that. It keeps changing, and I'm going with it. So it's actually coming along rather well. I'm kind of surprised. I wanted to write a novel in the first person from the husband's point of view. And what a different world that is. So, yeah, good times.
Well, you talk about visualizing your characters. Can you hear them? I just want to know if you hear voices. But is that how you create your dialogue, or do you have another method?
Can I visualize them? Yes, I can. I visualize them enough in my head that I can hear them. Am I talking to them? No, I'm not talking to them. However,
I do.
I can. Oh. Well, you know, I said hi. Pop on over. I can hear them. Like, what makes sense? You know, they go through this internal dialogue. Writers will go through this internal dialogue thing in their mind. And, you know, if you're alone, you look around the room and sometimes you'll talk things out too. Action scenes, fight scenes. I've been in martial arts for 37 years now, but mm-hmm. I still get up in the living room and I pretend to throw a right hook at my opponent. And then I switch to the opponent's side and I move in the living room and I do an upper block and I do a snap kick or something. That'll work. You know, then I go back and I write it all out. Or I did that for a knife fight scene once, you know, so I'm acting it out. So,
I've done the same thing. I studied martial arts myself for over 30 years.
Oh, what styles?
Taekwondo, Japanese Jiu-Jitsu, Jeet-Kune-Do.
Oh, nice. Very nice. Yeah. I'm all Japanese. I started off with judo for 11 years. Okay. Then I went into the Kijujutsu, Kido Jujutsu kind of blend. And then I'm still wrapping up with karate right now. And I've done, you know, 6 years of Tai Chi, and I've messed around with some Wing Chun guys and Taekwondo guys I've sparred with. So it's all fun.
It's all great stuff.
Oh, good, good. Well, you're a normal person then.
Okay, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I'm the only abnormal one. You know, actually, my dad used to use high karate. Oh,
the
cologne.
The cologne, yes.
Yeah. Does that count?
Oh, there you go.
Does that count? Does
that... Yeah, oh, that's, yeah. You're almost a brother. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's really sad, you know.
Oh, the only part is, it's like, you know, you're 18 and, you know, you have this fake ID and then you go get some beer and then you turn 19 and nobody ever asks you for ID.
Yeah.
I found the same thing with martial arts. I've never gotten into any problems, or I just look at them and I'm like, do you really want to do this? Cause I'm really ready. I've got almost four decades of studying, buddy. You have no idea how ready I am, but if you're not, I'm cool too, but you know, nothing ever happens. So. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, geez, you know, I've got nothing. I'm barely rode a bike, so I don't, you know.
Oh, well.
Well, you know, somebody's got to do it. So when you said you were talking about the poltergeist sort of thing, are you sort of into the paranormal?
How could a billion people be wrong? Like, come on. What is it? 1 in 7 people believe in some form of the afterlife, ghosts, things that go bump in the night. There's so much out there that can't be explained that I think there's got to be something there. I have a theory and an idea. I kind of brought that into my first novel I wrote. And, you know, Serving the Shadows recruitment was about a U.S. Army Ranger and whose brother died while on assignment with the CIA. However, he quickly finds out he can still talk to his brother. His brother's dead. And they finish off the assignment that his brother was on. And, you know, they save the world and the terrorists and all that. One thing I have learned, something always transitions from one form to another, and that's energy. You can't lose energy. It doesn't work that way. It just gets transformed into another form. We have 13 trillion synapses going on in our brains right now, and that all forms energy, even down to the quantum level. And when our bodies shut down, the energy has to go somewhere. It just doesn't dissipate into the world. So that form, that energy has to go somewhere. As to where, well, I guess we're all going to find out one day, but right now I don't have an answer.
Well, yeah, I just, when you bring it into your books like that, does that come from personal experience or is that just a kind of a belief, a far out thought of, well, this is the way, you know, you're talking about energy. That's kind of how you see it. And a possibility, and that's, you know, fair enough. But have you had any run-ins yourself?
Once when I was a child, actually. So,
if you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
The I was, you know, watching The Love Boat and Fantasy Island out in the living room. And
the way it always starts.
Yeah. Man, if I had a nickel. And so my mom was out in the kitchen cleaning up, and my little sister had already gone to bed. And I looked up, and I thought, well, I didn't think. I know. I can still see it to my mind, and it's been, well, quite a while, 44, 45 years. I can still see the figure crawling down the hallway, and it looked like some sort of shimmering white blanket over top. And I just said, Mom, Heather's up. My sister's up. She's crawling down the hall. And we came out. She would have crawled down the hall and turned into my bedroom. You could see it. We had an old wartime bungalow. And we went into my room, and there was nobody there. And then I went down. I checked my mom's room, checked the bathroom. And my mom opened my sister's bedroom door, and she's still in bed sleeping. And there was just the three of us in the house. And I still see it. I could still see that to this very day. It's one of those things you'll never forget. And my mom's like, okay, great.
Yeah.
So.
Well, maybe it's, yeah. It's what happens if you watch Tattoo and Fantasy Island.
Yeah.
You go in.
The ghost, boss, the ghost.
Yeah. It's the ghost. Yeah. I can see it now. It happens all the time, right?
Oh, no doubt. Yeah.
Well, that's what's interesting, that something like that stays with you. You know what I mean? All of these years. I mean, this last century, you know.
There's just absolutely no scientific, logical explanation for it. So, you know, same as all the UFO stuff going on. Well, there's always been UFOs. Now we kind of got proof, but nobody seemed to care because Donald Trump was running the country at the time.
They were just worried about staying alive.
Yeah, they had their own dumpster fires to put in. Yeah. Meanwhile, people were putting proof of UFOs online, and nobody's, that's great, you know, whatever. But Donald Trump, did you hear what he did today?
Yeah.
So.
Well, I think the problem with the whole paranormal is because it became televised. It became a trend. You know, all the ghost hunting shows and the UFO shows and that. And I think people are inundated with all of these theories, and a lot of them are crazy. You know, they don't just sit on, okay, we've seen this or spotted this or this person had this experience. There's so much exaggeration on the TV market that you create a lot of doubt in people. Because I don't doubt it, but a lot of the shows are crazy, you know.
Yeah, I do watch the History Channel, too, and do they take that to an extreme sometimes.
So. Yeah, you know, it kind of goes too far, and it's just entertainment. People got to realize that. So there's this line. But and that also leads to what kind of formula do you use then because when you talk about a poltergeist or you talk about hauntings and stuff like that, or when the officer, the guy was talking to his brother who was dead, what kind of formula do you use? Do you take from what's already sort of happened? Do you know what I'm saying? Like, we have kind of these tropes, these ideas of someone is a ghost and they appear as themselves, and you know, they follow through in the story and stuff like that. Do you just sort of take what's been built on, or do you have your own kind of theories?
I guess I started creating my own, mostly in my mind. They're there in the novel. However, you'd have to write it all out, I guess, and to understand it. I created a set of rules. You know, he can't, he's always in a fixed spot. He doesn't wander around too much. Like if the one character gets into a vehicle, he doesn't sit in the vehicle with him. He'll be on the other end waiting or something at the destination. He always appears to be the same. You know, he's not aging. He's not getting younger. He is what he is. And he's dressed casually. Same as, you know, when the moment he'd passed away or in that particular case was murdered. The I took it for the character in the novel is, you know, he's a full character. Like, he has dialogue and interacts with the main character as well, the dead brother. And, you know, I proposed that idea that, you know, how is this happening? How come I can see you and nobody else can? That kind of thing. And the theory I put forth in the novel was the fact that the neurons in the brain, you're my brother, maybe their our patterns are close enough that they're allowing me to interact with you. You can just see this. And then I proposed the idea, is this happening to other people out there in a similar manner, but we can't see them? So is this happening? Are other people seeing ghosts, but the ghosts are saying, hey, don't tell anybody because, you know, I'm dead. we don't know. So, and hey, maybe it's happening. I don't know. I'm not, I'm pretty sure it's not, but then again, I don't know all the answers either. So,
you better watch what you do, even when you're alone at home, you know, you know, someone's watching you.
For sure. I'm okay with that. Now I do try and steer clear of the religion in the books though. Is this happening because of a religious reason? I'm trying to avoid conflict in that regard, meaning I try and avoid talking about religion and I toy in politics. If you can avoid those two major things, you're going to be okay for the most part in conversations with people. So I try and do that same thing in the book, you know. Well, I'm hoping for obvious reasons for readership, to be honest.
Yeah.
So I don't want to piss a lot of people off.
Yeah. And I think, well, you know, rightfully so, these days people are very, as soon as they hear something political or they hear something religious, they get on edge and they either want to defend or they want to attack it. You know, there's no wiggle room right now. So it's probably better to stay away from that in writing. And it shouldn't be that way. I don't know why it's become so, I don't know, black and white, you know, so coarse, because there's no reason that you can't have someone, nobody's perfect. So I don't know why people can't just talk about it rather than, you know, I'm sort of confused with that. Also with today's society, did you look to be careful on how you worded things so that it would be kind of, you know, politically correct, I guess is the term. Are you careful on how you...
Yeah, for sure. I'm not trying to be an asshole.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to mince words here. And if you're an asshole and I'm offending you, I am sorry. So, I'm not going to... I'll just take one example would be, like, I don't use the word midget within my novels.
Right.
You know, you're a short person, or I guess the new technically the new term or politically correct term would be vertically challenged. Okay. Hey, you know, if that's the way it is, that's the way it is. Okay. Am I going to lose readers? Am I going to be sued? I don't know. I hope not. And that was an example. I never did use that. So please don't skim my books looking for such words.
Yeah. I'm going to look for it now. Hold on.
Yeah. Good luck. You know, it's the same concept. I don't want to, I want to entertain. I'm here to entertain people. And that's my main goal. I want to entertain you. I want you, when you finish my novel, to go, oh my God, that was good. I didn't see that ending coming. And I go, that was worth staying up late for. Not, wow, he used the word midget 432 times. Like, what? I guess he has his own shortcomings or something.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So, I want to focus on the story. I don't want to focus on, things that could be otherwise said properly, and that's where I'd rather do it.
No, and I agree totally. I'm the same way. I really don't understand the anger behind a lot of it. Well, I can see it in some cases, but I just sort of think that the last thing I want to do is hurt or upset someone or get them feeling bad about themselves. So I try to avoid that as well. But the thing is, like, you and I were of a certain age that we grew up in a certain condition. So some things are just come out of your mouth without thinking, because that's just where we grew up. So I just don't understand the anger on that when it's not meant to hurt someone. And you just say, like, if you just said midget, it would be, that's just all we ever said when we were young, right up till just recently. And then all of a sudden it's like, no, you can't say that. Oh, okay. Well, if someone says that and tells you why, then I know. But before someone brings it to your attention, you don't really know. So it's one of those fine lines.
Yeah. I'm also, you know, I'm open. Like, I just, if I'm doing something wrong or this is offensive to you, let me know. And I go, well, why is it offensive? Well, I don't like the way you did this. Well, I got some good news for you. And I go, it's okay to be offended, but don't expect me to make all these changes because simply one person's offended. You know, if I'm offending, you know, several hundred thousand people, then I would, well, first, thank you for buying my book too. I would be like, well, why is that offensive? Oh, I had absolutely no idea. I'm really sorry. I apologize. Allow me to do some corrections here. And I won't do it again.
Yeah.
You know, but if you're on your high horse, because it's okay to be offended, guys, move on, keep scrolling. Don't read that part.
Yeah, I think so. I think I say that to people all the time when they complain about me. You know, turn the channel. Because I really don't want to hurt anybody. I don't want to upset anybody, but it happens. But it's certainly not. I'm just trying to get some laughs and have good conversations. Yeah. It's not. There's nothing mean going on here. It's just ridiculous to think that. But people will take that. You know, one of the publisher I was working with a while back wanted to make some pretty aggressive changes, or aggressive, but there were changes that were sort of, you know, I didn't realize, like when the word ghetto, of course, had to be changed to working class neighborhood.
Right.
And things like that. Just things that I didn't even think about, you know, it almost shocked me in a way. Mm-hmm. Because isn't it really more about our intention? Like, when I say something to someone, isn't it really about if I'm saying it with hate or I hate you and call you a name and you're being, oh, you know, I hate this race or I hate this religion or I hate gay people, and they say something really bad in a bad firm. Isn't that really kind of what we're trying to stop here?
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah, that's, you know, we had a discussion a few days ago in my writing group, and it was about the word manpower.
Oh, yeah.
should we be using the word manpower? Well, and then the alternative was, what are we going to call it? People power? No, that doesn't. So, you know, is manpower offensive? So, and that started the whole, boy, this went on for a while.
I bet.
So, yeah. And the end result? We don't know.
Well, because, that, you know, again, you know, you're just saying it because you all know what it means. I don't see that as being, you know, so I guess it's because we didn't say woman. They're not included, I guess. Woman power, man power. But manpower, it's like when I heard that with some of the realtors taking away master suite in the U.S.
Right.
Because they don't want master. So it's first room, second room, third bedroom. Yeah. Like, they're no longer master suite. So, and to me, that's going to be a hard one to break. Isn't that just something we've said our whole life?
Well, I guess it just, for me, it comes back to who am I offending? Am I offending anybody? This is, you know, maybe I'm not here to offend anybody. I'm here to get along with everybody. And if, you know, I'm talking to a whole bunch of people or friends and stuff, and they're all offended by me using the word manpower, I don't see it. But, and I go, okay, well, then I'll switch to something else, whatever.
Change it to whoa, manpower. I don't know. I mean, it's like, how about dog power, cat power?
Yeah.
Cheetah power. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, it just seems like especially with the world. I mean, there's a lot of things going on that there's a lot of tension in the world, a lot of bad things mm-hmm. happening. And it's just like, I think it's kind of better to focus on more things like that personally. But
yeah, I'm right with you.
You know, but who am I, right?
Well, that's what even February 27th, Grim Measures came out, and all week long I've been trying to advertise and promote my novel, and I didn't feel like it. You know why? People are dying in Ukraine, and there's another war going on, and here I am in Canada trying to sell a novel. And I go, oh my God, how like it just. The relevancy of it diminished in my mind so much.
Yeah.
But I couldn't, it doesn't even compare, right? Here, these are my problems. This is my problem. I'm trying to break Facebook algorithm so I could get better demographics for my my novel. Yeah. And people are walking 12 miles with a newborn child to reach Poland so they're safe.
Yeah.
You know,
no,
yeah.
Well, and it's disturbing. It's disturbing not only for the people, but also because I don't know. I guess I was really naive thinking in the 90s and after the Berlin Wall fell in 89 and all this stuff. I thought we were all moving in this direction of freedom. And, you know, it's not perfect, but we're going in the right direction. And this last few years, it seems to be like a real breakdown of that. There's no togetherness there and this useless attack on people. Like it just, the whole thing is disturbing, you know, and it's hard to watch things like, you know, I guess they were just having some awards show and everyone's talking about the dress the person was wearing. It's just like, yeah. it just seems so out of place.
Yeah.
You know,
well, I'll be honest with you. I was in the Army, Canadian Reserves for 17 years. And if my situation were different, if I wasn't married and I didn't have a child right now, maybe a bit younger, I would probably pack my bags and go join them. They're looking for recruits that come and help the Ukrainian Army. I'd be there. I think I would, Canada can't send troops. They're sending equipment and supplies, but I would, right now I still feel the call. I still feel compelled to do something, you know, even if it's just going to be a Red Cross donation. So,
yeah,
well, I just, you know,
it's important.
What do you do?
Yeah. It's important to look at that and do things like that because we've got to help each other. Cause it's, it can turn around. It could be a news guy. I know out of, the Vancouver market. I know when he posted something about that, about, what would it be for if the U.S. decided that they want to take Canada for the resources and walk in and do the same thing, you know? You know, it's kind of to that scale. It can happen anywhere. We think it can't, but weird things happen.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, my heart goes out to them. And so if this is affecting anybody that's listening, boy, have you got my sympathies, and I wish you nothing but all the best, and I hope there's nothing but a good outcome from this that'll last for 1,000 years.
Yeah. How was that for you writing during this time, too, and all that?
You know what? I find it it's the relevancy. Here I am trying to write a novel, continue on with my life, and on the news, as my wife's watching the news, you're seeing, you know, bombed out buildings, and what do you, he just kind of sets it changes your perspective. It really does. So,
Oh,
priorities.
Totally. Well, I'm glad. I mean, it's good to have good people like you out there that think about these, and and you do realize that, you know, you sort of, it makes you aware of how lucky things are for you at the time, right? You know, puts you in a good place. So that's excellent.
For sure.
So now the book is out. Is this going to be in bookstores too, or is this just an Amazon?
Right now it's on ebook only, and it's from Amazon, Barnes and Noble, Kobo, Indigo, all over. And there's a dozen different places. They're literally pretty much anywhere you can get an ebook from. You can download Grim Measures.
Now we're going to link that up to our site as well. And do you have a web page as well now?
I do. It's DavidDarlingBooks.com. In the second tab in there is books, and there's links to all my novels in there.
Do you like doing social media with readers or with people that follow you? Or
to be honest, I'm not a fan of social media. I almost. if it wasn't for the significant fact of keeping in touch with family, posting pictures for your family, so you know my great aunts and all of them can see it, and my mom, I probably wouldn't have done it. As a writer, wow, do you ever need it? Just for getting the word out. It takes one person on Twitter to like your comment, and that shows up on all their friends' Twitter feed. And then one other person might like it, and it shows up on all, you know, two friends and so on and so on. So in that regard, you need it. But one thing I'm finding, and it's just making my day, is the reader comments, the retweets, the sharing. Boy, do I love that. I love hearing back from everybody that's been reading my novels. And I've heard a couple of good comments today saying, all these agents that turned David Darling down are utter fools. His books are fantastic. And it just went on and on. Oh my God. I'm like, who is this guy? like, let me send you something. So yeah. So I just love it. In that regard, I truly do benefit from social media in that regard.
Yeah. I think it's important just to look for the good things. I think it's with us. It's here, it's now, it's going to keep on going and move further and develop into even more of an interaction. So I think it's a good thing. You just got to kind of look at the good things you can get out of it. You know, you meet some really good people, you hear some really good things and that, and just, you know, just delete the other ones. that's what it's there for, you know.
You got
it. Don't waste your time getting mad. I just say, well, bye-bye, you know, and stuff. What's your favorite social media? Are you like a real TikTok guy? I could see you on there dancing with the puppy.
Well, I'm not going to lie. I did create a TikTok account because my wife says, you know, there's a hashtag on TikTok called Book Talk,
right?
And authors are selling books on through TikTok. And I went, what? There's another way to sell books? I'm in. So that day I started creating some content. You know, I put an old picture of a moose swimming across the river while I was fishing. That got more likes than my novel picture. But I've sold books through TikTok. Whatever. If there's a way to do it, I'll figure it out. I'm not on it all.
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, I had someone had bought one of my books and they had it signed, and then they were on TikTok and they showed that them opening the book with the signature and that, and they flashed that around and got a couple thousand likes. It's like crazy.
Perfect.
Yeah. So perfect. You know.
Well, if you watch Dragon's Den, and that one, the guy who owns the Mavericks, Mark.
Cuban, yeah.
Cuban, yeah. He pretty much says right now, he goes, if you're not selling and advertising on TikTok, you're dead. He goes, if you can't put a 10 to 15 second commercial out, he goes, you're dead. He goes, you're not making anything. And this is, you know, multi-billionaire. So, yeah, I'll listen to him. And my wife.
Yeah.
And my
wife. Oh, yeah. Well, you kind of have to there, right? But Cuban doesn't know if you don't listen to him, but your wife does. So there's a difference there.
How did you know?
I just know how these things work. You know, I've heard. I've read books.
It's almost like you're psychic or something. Well, good times.
Yeah, let's not go that far. Well, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for coming on the show and helping us out here. It's always a good thing. So now the book.
Thank you.
The book people need to buy. And if you don't, you're just crazy. This is like, you know, come on. It's $2.99 for a Kindle, and it's called Grim Measures. Okay, so this is something you need. And it's by the one and only David Darling. And that's his real name, okay? So you can't.
True story.
Yeah. You can't forget that. So, again, David, thank you for coming on the show.
Well, thank you, Alan, and thank you, David. It's been a pleasure, and I'll always appreciate it.
Thanks, David.
Tired of wasting time trying to decide what to watch on your streaming service? Go to our website and look for the Martino Movie Reviews.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.